though denounced as a tyrant and a sorcerer, had a more acute eye for learning and the fine arts than the pretentious inhabitants of Saint-Paul. The glitter of the torch flames reflected in the gold and silver plate on the sideboard hurt her eyes. She closed them and sank away instantly into a deep pool of exhaustion, a darkness without rest, riddled with the voices and stifled laughter of the women. It seemed to her that the walls of Saint-Paul vibrated with sound like the walls of a gigantic beehive. The entire enormous palace, with its complex structure which linked halls, chambers, towers, bastions, inner courtyards, annexes, stables and gardens, enclosed her like a honeycomb of cells buzzing with bees. She was aware all at the same time of members of the household running up and down the stairs and through the corridors, of the continuous uproar in and around the kitchens, larders and wine cellars where the christening meal and the banquet were being prepared, of the stamping of hooves and the jingle of weapons and armour in the guardrooms, of the chirping and twittering of birds in the great indoor aviary, of the roaring of lions, the king's menagerie in their winter quarters, and more disturbing than all this was the ceaseless cacophony of the bells. She murmured prayers and endeavoured to lose herself in thoughts of the ceremony nearby in the church of St. Paul, where even now her son was receiving baptism over the basin hung with gold brocade. She thought of her brother-in-law, the king, who, as godfather, had to hold the child in his right arm throughout the christening. She had been told that he was pleased at the birth and the planned festivities. For the first time in months he had left the castle of Creil, where he was confined, to show himself to the public. His relatives, warned by physicians, watched him anxiously, fearing a sudden renewed outburst of madness. Valentina felt a heart-rending pity for the king, of whom she was as fond as he was of her. The news 2 years earlier of an unexpected eruption of his illness had upset her no less, although she reacted in a different way, than it had upset the queen. Despite her displays of desperate grief, Isabeau believed, or professed to believe, that recovery was possible. Valentine, on the other hand, perhaps because of her swifter southern intuition, knew that the germ of madness, always present in the king's childlike, capricious nature, had now put down roots that were ineradicable. To some degree, Valentine shared in the view that a madman was little more than a dangerous animal. But the thought of her brother-in-law imprisoned in the barred balcony high above the walls of Creil, gazing down from his cage at the nobles of his retinue who were playing ball in the dry moat below, filled her with a horror and compassion. Although she knew that Isabeau's grief was sincere, she could not remain blind to the avidity with which the queen had taken over the administration of the court and the Duke of Burgundy the control of affairs of state. She had little faith in the physician Guillaume de Arcy, however capable he might be. She no longer believed that illness could be banished by confession and exorcism. The previous winter she had found another physician's recommendation for a cure even less beneficial. The king should be kept away from the council and all state business. He should be diverted with various amusements. As a result, Saint-Paul became a madhouse where the music was never silenced, where the uproar of balls and drinking bouts never stopped, where Isabeau, evening after evening on the arm of Louis d'Orléans, led the rows of celebrants in their multicoloured finery, and the king, actually somewhat recovered, clapped his hands in time with the music and looked on eagerly at each new entertainment. Torchlight pricked Valentine's closed eyes. The heat of the lying-in chamber made her think of the endless nights spent under the canopy of tapestries and fading flowers at the side of the king, who enjoyed having her near him and would not allow her to withdraw. As she looked down from the raised platform upon the crowd in the overflowing hall, it often seemed to her that she was in a purgatory more